Greetings, humans. You have entered the Command Zone, your destination for all aspects of Elder Dragon Highlander. Enjoy your stay.
More than a feeling.
More than a feeling.
More than a feeling.
More than a feeling.
Just all like, right.
You got into that one.
Yeah, man.
That was very happy. Yeah, that's the best part.
Okay. Hey, everyone. How's it going? You're listening to The Command Zone. I'm your host, Jimmy Wong.
How's it? It's Josh Lee Kwai.
And we are joined for our very first video guest ever. Craig, look at, you're on all the cameras.
I'm looking at all three of them. I mean, everybody's going to see this. I'm like, okay, which one do I address?
Oh, crap. Oh, God. We're doing this on
the red lights are on.
Oh, Jimmy once again forgot to change the shirts so that the illusion has been broken. We know that all of these last three podcasts have been recorded at the same time.
I'm back.
And badder than ever.
And it's a brand new day. Papa's got a brand new shirt. That could be either song we did. So today we are doing, similar to what our episode with Corbin Hostler was, we're doing a sort of a mini deck tech slash deck doctors of a deck that Craig has. And this is actually an archetype that we talked about the other day on the show on our Color Wheel Blue episode, which is Mono Blue. So we're going to be talking about Tauron Sky Summoner. But first, let's talk about our sponsor for the show, Card Kingdom. Some exciting news.
Yeah, we've got a contest.
Ooh.
So when you're hearing this, which is beginning on October 4th, Card Kingdom is having an Inventor's Fair contest.
Ooh, that's really exciting. There's going to be three distinct challenges, so there's three different ways that you can enter. The first challenge is to brew a casual deck using Aetherflux Reservoir.
Challenge number two is to brew a commander deck using Rashmi, Eternity's Crafter, as its general.
I think you mean Rashmi.
Rashmi. Sorry, Shivam.
And challenge number three, build a standard deck using Aetherworks Marvel. So these are three cards, all from Kaladesh. Entries must be submitted by Sunday, October 9th, and we're going to select finalists for each of the three challenges by the 11th, and Card Kingdom is going to present the decks to us and also two of our friends. The Loading Ready Run podcast and the Magic the Amateuring podcast. We're going to judge the finalists for the Rashmi Eternity's Crafters EDH deck, and the winner is going to be chosen between the 11th and the 14th, and you're going to receive a booster box of Kaladesh. So that's really exciting. You get a chance to be judged and have a deck looked at by Loading Ready Run, MTA Cast, and ourselves.
The Aetherflux Reservoir deck will be judged by Loading Ready Run, and to submit, you email your deck list to aetherfluxreservoir@cardkingdom.com.
The second challenge, the one judged by us, the Rashmi Eternity's Crafter EDH deck, send a deck list to rashmi@cardkingdom.com.
And for the third entry, which is the Aetherworks Marvel Standard deck, that's going to be judged by Magic the Amateuring. And to submit, you email your decklist to aetherworksmarvel@cardkingdom.com.
Yeah, so if you guys want to find out more of the contest rules, go to cardkingdom.com/static/inventors-fair. And of course, there's going to be all the links in the description below, which is the best way to find out all the correct emails and all that stuff. So really exciting. You could win a box of Kaladesh.
I mean, you should enter all three because that's three chances to win a booster box of Kaladesh.
Yeah.
Remember, you need to enter between now and the 9th, October 9th, which is a Sunday.
Yeah, so you guys have 5 days from the release of this podcast to do so. All right.
Get on it.
Yeah.
We should introduce Craig. Did we introduce Craig?
No. Hello, Craig. How you going?
I'm going good.
How are you going?
How you going, Craig?
How
you doing, Craig? So Craig's been on the show a lot. Craig's one of the main reasons that I play Commander. Craig has the most decks out of all of us. He has the most cards out of all of us.
I just took apart four decks, so I'm down to 21, including my three girlfriends.
21.
So I might have you. 18 of mine.
Oh, I've got you then.
Yeah.
You got more decks than Craig?
We did it!
Hey!
We did it!
Why are we celebrating?
Number one! I'm the Michael Phelps of our playgroup.
Nice.
I mean, as far as having
that
more decks,
true.
Not necessarily winning more.
That is a good
more.
Person to aspire
you
to be.
You do have kind of the win rate. Because you have the
I can see that. Yeah, I can see that.
No, I do not.
Yeah, that'd be.
I know what you guys
ridiculous.
Are doing right now.
Phelps has done some ridiculous things.
Yeah.
He needs to be unseated.
That maybe was
Take
a little
him
bit
off the
ambitious.
Throne.
He might be by, ambitious.
I'm talking about Josh in terms of our
no,
play
we're see we're playing unseat tonight Josh. After this, and I know what they're doing, and you know what they're doing. Everybody knows. We know what you're doing, people.
What are you talking about?
I know what you're doing,
Josh. So Craig is also known as our resident Infect expert. You yep. are the only person in our playgroup that plays Infect.
Love it.
You do, indeed. And you have a very great style of building decks. I love the decks that you build. They're always very streamlined, and they often have cards that make me go, whoa!
Yeah, that's a card?
That, no way, because you've been collecting for a very long time.
And usually, like, the cards that you see that you're like, whoa, I was probably playing against somebody else, and they played it on me, and I was like, whoa.
Craig,
like,
you are,
like, they made that? They printed that?
Craig's one of those guys who, in the middle of the game, he'll pull out his phone, and he'll be, like, writing down cards into his notepad.
Oh, absolutely. Taking it out, taking a picture of the card.
He'll be like, what is that? Okay. Yeah. I need to, I'm going to get that card.
How is that comboing off of that?
And, I'm doing that to you later.
So, Craig. Yeah, Craig. So recently you've actually put all of your decks on tappedout.net, and has that been very helpful for you?
It's been incredibly helpful. I mean, it really helps to kind of break the deck down in ways you haven't thought of it yet. It'll give you immediately the converted mana cost of all the cards that are non-lands. Mm-hmm. It'll tell you the breakdown of what's, you know, what's blue, what's an artifact, what's a sorcery, you know. So, and the converted mana cost of each card, which then you can click on and see which, like, it'll highlight which ones are 7 mana cost. So you can break it down that way. And it's really helped me to really finalize the decks, because it allows you to kind of like look at it from one standpoint rather than flipping through and being
you get like a big picture perspective.
Do I have a Consecrated Sphinx in here?
Yeah, and it'll show you what, you know, color breakdown and stuff is on your decks.
Also, the mana curve is really like, you can look and the graph will be like, oh man, I have way too many high drops in here, because the graph just goes up. Yeah.
So the deck that we're doing today is your Tauront Sky Summoner deck. We're doing a pseudo deck Doctors on the list. It's actually one that me and Josh have played against multiple times.
We've referenced it on the show many times.
Yeah. But it's interesting because it always comes out as a response deck to what something that's happening. And
you know Craig's frustrated when the Tauront deck comes out.
It was kind of built for that. It was built to either be a response to, I got beat and I'm going to counter everything that you've done, or as support. So like when I used to play
Two-Headed Giant.
Exactly. When we used to play at the card shop, we'd play Secret Partners and we'd play Two-Headed Giant, and it was, I love that format. So I built this, you know, when I saw Talrand, I was like, oh my God. Like, so many thoughts. And
Tauron's text is 2BB for a legendary merfolk wizard. He's a 2/2. And whenever you cast an instant or sorcery spell, you put a 2/2 Drake creature token with flying onto the battlefield. So we're specifically talking about your deck, which is a counterspell heavy deck.
Yes.
It's what we'd call a permission deck.
Yeah.
Like, can I cast this? Does it resolve? Yeah.
And then Craig's like, no, I get a 2/2 Drake. That Drake's coming at you later. Now, it's interesting because this deck, I like it, but I don't think I've ever seen it win.
It's not built to win outright on its own.
Mm-hmm.
So it's built as what it is. It's really built as like a support deck. Like, I really shouldn't be playing it one against, like, in a 4 or 5 player game, which is why there's a card that I want to talk about later that I'm thinking about putting in that'll give me more options for possibly game winners and stuff like that. But I didn't really build it to be a game.
It's super good in Two-Headed Giant or Three-Headed Giant, though. I know many times you pulled that out in that situation. And then your team's very likely to win because the deck is so good at just stopping the opponent's, like, really important things.
It kind of gets unfair at that point, especially if you're playing with another control deck that has, like, some sort of attack capability, because the fact that this is a control deck that's just counter, but then if you get Drakes on top of it, like 2/2 flyers, so you have blockers and attackers, especially in Two-Headed Giant, that's huge. And, you know, which is why there's a lot of ramp in here to try and get Talrand out as fast as possible so you get those Drakes.
Now, let's actually talk about the stats on your list. And it's interesting because if you look at the deck, there's actually 5 sources of mana ramp. 7 if you count Mana Drain and High Tide, both are cards that are sort of one-off ramp cards, but 5 total. You have 8 card draw spells. You only have 2 single target removals, but you could kind of consider a counterspell to be a single target removal.
I mean, it really is.
It really is. And in that case, the number jumps up to like 13, 14. You have two board quote-unquote wipes. Because this is mono blue, you don't really have board wipes. You have stuff like Cyclonic Rift, which just bounces everything. In terms of tutors, you have two tutors that look for instants and sorceries. And you have two instant and sorceries or buyback cards, cards that like Archaeomancer, you don't have that in your deck, but cards that will go be like, you can get this instant or sorcery back to your hand. You have it in instant or sorcery form. 31 instants, 13 sorceries, and 3 spells that are uncounterable. So I'm curious actually as to why you don't have as many tutor and buyback options in a deck like this, because this deck wants to play the long game because you're not going to win the short game. We talked about this in our Color Wheel Blue episode that blue plays a very reactive game over a long period of time and isn't very fast out the gate. So I think the first thing that really came to mind here is, well, if you don't have ways to get your spells back, how are you going to win a long game if you're doing one-for-one counters on stuff? Because you're eventually going to run out of gas. So, do you have any answers to that?
I honestly, my real thought, I'm thinking here and I'm like, oh my God, I've never really thought about it. Because I really haven't. I built this kind of specifically to be a support deck, mm-hmm. is really why this exists. And then I know that it exists as a counter heavy deck. So when I get beat a few times by one person, I'll break this out and be like, you're having as bad a time as I just had.
I've definitely had the Dalaran deck pulled out on me before.
Exactly.
Where it's like, Josh, you're just not winning this game.
Yeah.
And you're like, yeah, okay, fair. Fair enough.
Well, my question is, can the deck win? In 1v1, yeah, this deck
in
stomps.
1v1, it's unbelievable. Yeah, it depends how many players you have. The more players you have, the harder it is to win.
And yeah, just because you're one for one-ing stuff and you just can't keep up. And yeah, and the deck doesn't have one big explosive thing it can do at any mm-hmm. time, right? That's, I think, what the deck maybe needs is something in there that's one big explosive thing that if I can last long enough and get to this, I'll win.
Right. Or the other option is I'm going to just keep making drakes and these drakes are going to eventually kill you from just doing 2, 4, 6, 8, 10 damage. You know, that damage adds up the more drakes you have on the
especially
battlefield.
Especially if it was filled with more turn-taking cards. Right yes. now there's only two and there could be a lot more put in that. There's definitely different builds for this
deck. If you had, say, 6 or 7 drakes, some modest amount, you could attack, take another turn, attack, maybe win that way.
Right.
Yeah, or you can set up a mnemonic wall time stretch plus a bounce card. Or a flicker card.
Capsize,
yeah. So you can
you'd have to have a ton of mana, but it's possible.
You'd have to have a lot of mana, but it's possible. And
which is easy to do in a monocolor deck, because you have all the mana doubling artifacts, you mm-hmm. know, the one that exiles a card.
Extra planar lens.
You have the Gauntlet of Power, Sphere Sun.
Yeah, Cage Sun.
Yeah. So a lot of ways to double mana, plus doubling cube.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the interesting thing about this deck, and that's the one thing I was sort of wondering about, is that you need to find, obviously, a delicate balance, because for a deck that wants to win with potentially the Drakes flying in, are you going to be able to do that if you put in too many mana doublers? Where is the balance here? But let's very quickly talk about the best cards in the deck. Now, in your opinion, I wrote down what I thought the best cards in the deck were. Do you have any that you think are just the standouts, the ones that always do work for you when you play this deck?
Yes. One, Kill Switch. It just always does work because everybody has artifacts, whether it's Soul Rings or, Mana Ramp, just things that if it's tapped, that stinks for them. And it taps on your untapped step with your other artifacts.
Right. So let's read
Kill
quick.
Switch. This card is absurd. I didn't even realize this card existed.
We actually have the card here and it's foil. This is cool thing about video. Look, I'm holding it. Yeah, which means the Oracle text may be slightly different. Kill Switch is 3 mana for an artifact. Pay 2 and tap it. Tap all other artifacts they don't untap during their controller's untap steps as long as Kill Switch remains tapped.
That's the Oracle, I believe.
So you tap it, tap all artifacts on the table, and then as long as you don't untap Kill Switch, they don't untap ever.
Yeah.
I'll typically keep this and a Soul Ring untapped. And sometimes put it on top of my library, so then at the end of turn, I tap this with my Soul Ring. It remains tapped until my untap step. So does everybody else's. Mine untap, theirs don't. Do it at the end of my turn again.
Yeah, this card is really absurd in that it creates a different kind of oppressive field for your opponents, whereas you holding up blue mana can be like, hey, I'm going to counter anything you do. Kill Switch just actively strips away some of people's best forms of ramp and fast mana otherwise, which is really important, I think, in a deck like this.
Or in artifact decks, you know, like I've definitely played a few games where certain players couldn't really play certain turns because of that card, which is always effective in a control deck. It's what you want to be doing.
Ah, yeah, that is going on my next overperformers list.
Yeah, that definitely is. I mean, it affects every artifact on the battlefield. I think Pact of Negation and Force of Will have to be two of your strongest cards in the deck as well, just because it still has a surprise factor, and it really just has the, oh, Craig's tapped out, I can finally resolve, spend all my mana to do this one game-winning play, and you're like, no, I actually have answers to that as well. I think one of the best ways to beat a counterspell.deck is to play your worst spells out first, hope they get countered, and just play through it, right? With three other players at the table, you're not going to be able to counter everything. At a certain point, they're just going to be able to resolve more stuff than you can handle and then slowly win the game over that.
Right.
Or you play your commander, because it's a card that if they counter it, you don't lose the card, so you don't lose the card advantage. But they do lose a card for countering it, so that's just untenable in the long run.
The only thing that stinks about that is that now it costs you two more to cast your commander next time.
It's true. Right. And it depends on where you're at in the game. Maybe you can't do that. But early on, generally, you can. And like if everybody does that, they can't counter all the commanders. And then if they can, then the next turn, like they're going to have like two cards in their hand. They can't do it again.
They're going to have a real bad time. Capsize, how often are you casting this without buyback?
Don't French fry before you pizza, man. What was the question?
Capsize, how often are you casting this without buyback?
Oh, so much. Oh, my goodness.
No, without buyback.
Oh, never. I won't say never.
It has to be an emergency,
It has to be an emergency.
I'm going to die.
I mean, we all know how powerful Capsize is when you have six mana or more. Mm-hmm. And especially in this deck, like, I'm not running...
Well, if you have 12 mana.
Well, that's exactly, like, with High Tide. You know, I'm not running any of the other doublers, but High Tide is an instant, so it gives me a Drake, and then I just have tons of mana to do whatever I want with, so Capsize is a great option.
Yeah,
if you're really mad at somebody, you can just capsize them out of the game a lot of times, just like bounce their stuff, then just start bouncing their lands, and then before they know it, they're like, got four lands in play and nothing else, and it's just like over.
Yeah, I mean, one blue buyback, three, return target permanent to its owner's hands. They don't make cards like this anymore because it says return target permanent. And the buyback mechanic is absurd because for six mana, you can just take one thing off the board every single turn, and you get this card back in your hand. The only thing that really gets around this is someone counters your Capsize, but knowing your deck, you probably have answers for that.
Right, exactly, which is, you know, why I would hold up a Pact of Negation or a Force of Will, you know, if I had that in my hand.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least enough mana, hopefully, for another sort of counterspell.
Now, what kind of issues do you think this deck has? Like, are there any specific decks or archetypes that really defeat it handily? Or does this deck have favorable matchups? For instance, if you're playing all creature decks, if you're playing all spell decks?
It's tough against like mono red's very good against this because the burn on the creatures can be really good or just on my general because you nuke my general, basically that's it. If you can counter or nuke my general, it really doesn't stand up after that.
Right, so your general is the most important part of getting your win condition.
Absolutely
here.
Without question, which is, you know, why it really hasn't been thought through as a standalone deck.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like any deck that's going to have a lot of early plays that are threats would be tough, which is rare in our format, but you don't have a lot of ways once something's out. Like if they get like two early creatures,
absolutely,
there's not like a ton of stuff in the deck that does.
And there's two recent cards that I do want to add because of that. One of them, I forget what they're called, but they're from the recent set from
Eldritch Moon. What are they?
One of them is like a common or uncommon, and it's a bounce target permanent.
Yeah, insubstantiate or spell.
Unsubstantiate. Yeah. Yep. And then the other one, the rare, it's two blue, two other, and it does something crazy that
is
you
it spell queller.
Oh yeah. This is on the list that I made here. It's exile all spells off.
Exactly.
Summary dismissal.
I just haven't gotten either of them, so I think I probably have one of the unsubstantiated.
You know where you could go to get those.
Yeah, Card Kingdom.
Oh, wow. I was going to say I was going
to
trade you one. But
we did not even train him to say that? Yeah. Perfect. But slash Command Zone. Make sure you use the affiliate link. Okay.
All right. Let's talk about ways that we can upgrade this deck. I look through the list, and it feels in a very sort of Craig Blanchett way. It's very linear. A lot of counter spells, a lot of like, I'm going to stop you from doing something, but not a lot of ways to sort of finish the game slash protect yourself in the way that I think you want to play this deck. So one thing that I loved seeing was Kill Switch, because that card to me is just like, it says perfect. If your opponents have to be, oh, well, hold on. You got Riv one page, Josh? Are you done with
the
page?
Oh, yeah, sorry. Here, we do a thing.
Yeah.
You have to just throw it over your shoulder. Ready? Wait. Oh. Man, do it like you mean it. Do it like you mean it.
Ooh, it was a satisfying noise. anyway, cards like Kill Switch to me scream perfect, because one of the big things about playing through counterspells is that you have to have enough mana to play two things a turn, and taking people's mana off means that, oh, shoot, I can only play one spell a turn. So I'm thinking there needs to be more stacks type effects in this deck, because you're going to be able to utilize your mana better than anyone else's. Have you heard of Arcane Laboratory?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, one spell per turn, which is good in a deck like this because I'm countering stuff.
Yeah, so if they can only play one thing and you get the choice of whether or not you get to counter it, that really puts the pressure on the player to think, man, I want to align myself with Craig so that he... Because there's nothing that says in a four-player game in EDH that you can't make it two-headed giant for yourself with another
Arcane
player.
Arcane Laboratory
the table.
Is a perfect addition to this, no matter what, because you're right. It's like I play my good spell on my turn.
Well, I just have more instants, more things that you're going to be able to do during other turns, and you can play one spell on their turn, one spell on the next player's turn.
Mm-hmm.
But most decks are going to be like, well, that means I have one spell per rotation of the table.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The only thing that would take away from some of the things in this are the cantrips.
Right. Well, cantrips are nice. The thing is about...
But you're never tapping out.
You're never tapping
True.
Out, right?
And some of the cantrips are counterspells in themselves.
So,
yeah, exactly. Another card like Overburden, which is one in the blue for an enchantment. Whenever a player puts a non-token creature onto the battlefield, that player returns a land he or she controls to its owner's hand.
I love this card.
Yeah, it's like... It's interesting because blue, like we said before on our Color Wheel episode, they affect the board and they morph mana and they do things that are funky that aren't removal. But this essentially just creates massive tempo in your favor because, one, it's non-token creatures, so your drakes don't care.
Mm-hmm.
And two, like by denying other people's mana and you're just continuing to put out lands every single turn, you're going to be able to shut the game out
this
in a way.
Bounce them with the spells, though, right?
No, it's whenever a player puts a non-token creature onto the battlefield.
Oh, it's a non-token.
Mm-hmm.
Non-token creature. So you're it would be if you
Oh, because it says creature card. Gotcha.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Sweet. Okay. I love it. Love it.
Well, I don't know if I love it. I'm just telling you that you should probably put this in here, but I don't want you to.
I've been swimming in raw sewage. I love it. I don't know how that's going to become a thing on the show. Somebody knows what movies that's from, right? Somebody on Twitter?
I'm sure Terry will edit in the nice
oh,
little clip here.
Oh, true. Terry's like, what the hell movie is that from?
Yeah, time to Google it.
Good luck, Terry.
This next card is one of your favorites, Josh. How many decks do you play this in now?
A lot.
Frozen Aether?
Yeah, a lot. Oh, that or its cousins. You know, Blind Obedience, Kismet.
The chick, what's her name? The Sovereign.
Felidar Sovereign? No.
No.
I don't play it on the creature because I don't like creatures, but I definitely play it on, whatever. If I'm in white and blue.
Oh, Imposing Sovereign.
Imposing Sovereign. Yeah. Anyway, Frozen Aether is, is it exactly Kismet?
It's the best one.
It's artifacts, creatures, and lands.
But it's your opponent's control, right?
Yeah, your opponent's control come into play.
I think
it's
exactly Kismet.
It's all three color and opponents. It's perfect.
Yeah. It's interesting because it's color shifted because it was in Planar Chaos. And again, I highly encourage you just to look through the set of Planar Chaos if you have a monocolored deck and go, oh, that's an effect I always wanted in my deck.
This is one of those effects I think people look at it and they just don't think it's going to do much. And it always just wrecks everybody. And everybody's like, wait a minute. Half my cards don't do what I want to.
Mm-hmm.
It's artifacts, creatures, and lands your opponent's control enter the battlefield tapped.
Yeah.
Is that right? Yeah. Again, even just hearing it just now, you thought, well, that's not a big deal. It's a big deal.
Especially in combination with one of my other favorite cards in the deck, which is Back to Basics, because I'm playing so many basic
it's
islands.
The Blue Blood Moon.
Yep.
Do you like Back to Basics, Josh?
No.
Because it's the Blue Blood Moon.
No,
but it's
don't.
Blue. It's your favorite color.
But I don't.
Back to Basics says non-basic lands don't untap during their controller's untap step. And in a monocolored deck, this is exactly what you want to be doing, because this is blue ramp. Right. If you're making everyone's lands come into play tapped, that means you are ahead. You're not in turn four with five lands.
But you're ahead of your opponents.
You're ahead of all your opponents.
I never thought of it that
Me
way.
Neither.
But that's right.
That's an interesting way to think about it. But
good job, Blue. You did it. There's also a card like Stasis. Now, Stasis
I do like this one.
Yeah, it's interesting because players don't get in an untap phase. You just skip your untap steps, and there's a cumulative upkeep. But it kind of hurts you a little bit, but I feel like it's one of those cards where you get to choose when you don't do it anymore, and your Drakes can start swinging in for massive amounts of damage, or you take infinite turns or whatever.
Yeah, Stasis is... it feels tough. I usually don't like to play Stasis unless I have a way to abuse it. Like, mm-hmm. I'm bouncing it before my turn, untapping, and then playing again. Like, if I had Capsize in the deck, which you do, then there's the chance of play it, they don't untap, I Capsize it on the end step before my turn.
Right.
And I'd have to have 10 to 12 mana at that point available to me, which is doable. And then I could do that every
and
turn.
But that's the game ender that this deck is looking for.
Yeah, it might be
around 10 mana. That's when it's like, I don't know what to do anymore.
Right, well, I don't have an explosive thing.
Like everybody else is doing crazy things or like 3, 4, 5 things a turn, which is why I'm starting to like Arcane Laboratory more.
Well, the question is, like, would you put the Brine Elemental lock in this deck?
Do you think the Pickles lock?
The Pickles lock?
So
Brine Elemental is a morph creature that when you unmorph it for 7 mana, each opponent skips his or her next untap step, and then you have a card like Vesuvian
Shapeshifter,
which is a morph card that can flip back down and copy another card, so you can copy a Brine Elemental over and over again with this siege upkeep.
You basically just flip a Brine Elemental every turn if you have the Pickles lock, and I think it costs 5 mana to keep it going.
It costs 2 to morph the Vesuvian Shapeshifter, and at the beginning of your upkeep, you can turn this creature face down, so it just costs...
Oh, and then you morph it up for 2 every turn.
Then you morph it up for 2, copying the Brine Elemental.
So it just takes 2 mana every turn to keep it up once you've got the Pickles lock. And nobody untaps, basically. The problem is that... Well, both those cards are okay on their own. Like, mm-hmm. just having it so everybody doesn't untap for one turn is pretty strong. And just having a Shapeshifter that's going to clone something else on the table is not the worst. It's not bad. That's what I would look for if I was going to put a combo like that in my deck, which is that, are those cards still viable if you just play one of them? And I think probably.
Mm-hmm. The interesting thing is that it doesn't support your commander directly, but at the same time, you're always trying to buy time with this deck. That's why I still like Stasis, is because you're trying to buy enough time to get to 7 mana, 10 mana, 11 mana, or whatever.
Well, you hopefully are. At this point, we need to still build in something that says when I get there, I win, though.
Right. And I'm kind of okay with this deck just being like, look, I've countered everything. I'm going to beat you not with some broken, crazy, like, Eldrazi.
Just with Drakes.
I'm just going to hit you with 2/2s.
Yeah.
Because that, I mean, you really want to steal. You really want someone to have a bad time. Death by 1,000 cuts. In this case, death by 1,000 Drakes.
Well, let's talk about this card then.
Oh yes,
because you pulled this aside, and this helps that plan, right?
Absolutely,
it doubles that plan. Actually, so does this one. Let's talk about this one first. I'll read it and I'll let you talk about it. So it's Docent of Perfection. I'm gonna take it out of here. It's not foil or anything, so we're okay. Oh my gosh! Just kidding.
oh my gosh! I just tore it in half. I don't know why.
Whoops. Okay.
My hands. I can't stop.
Docent of Perfection is from Eldritch Moon. It's a double face card. On the front side, it's 3 and 2 blue for a creature insect horror. It's a 5/4 with flying. It says, whenever you cast an instant or sorcery spell, put a 1/1 blue human wizard creature token onto the battlefield. Then, if you control 3 or more wizards, transform it. So it flips over.
He himself is a wizard, right?
No, it's an insect horror.
Okay, Talrand mm-hmm. is a wizard.
Talrand's a wizard, so all you need to do is cast 2 instants or sorceries. This thing will flip, and then as long as Talrand's out. And then on the other side, it's Final Iteration, because this is the Delver of Secrets, just continually evolved. Creature Eldrazi Insect, it's a 6/5 with flying. It says wizards you control get +2/+1 and have flying. So all those little 1/1s you made are actually 3/2 flyers now. Mm-hmm. And then whenever you cast an instant or sorcery spell, put a 1/1 blue human wizard creature token onto the battlefield. So whenever you cast an instant or sorcery, put a 3/2 flyer out and a 2/2 flyer. Because of Talrand, yeah.
Yep.
So if you can get this out at the same time as Talrand, that actually feels like a win condition, because at that point, instead of needing to cast 5 or 6 instant or sorceries, I got to cast 2 or 3.
Absolutely, which late game too, because like this is 5 to cast. So let's say I've casted Talrand twice before, so now he's 8 to cast, and I have this in my hand. It's basically another Talrand.
Yeah,
so it's another way out in this deck, which I love, because I got this in a draft recently at your house. I was like, oh my God, I know exactly where this is going. And then the next one's Sakashima the Imposter, which is a...
one of my favorite clones of all time now.
I learned about this from Jimmy.
I learned about it from you.
I think it's the best clone, yeah.
It's unreal. It's two blue and two other for a 3-1 legendary creature, human rogue. As Sakashima the Imposter comes into play, you may choose a creature in play. If you do, Sakashima comes into play as a copy of that creature, except its name is still Sakashima the Imposter. It's still legendary, and it games... two blue and two other, return Sakashima the Imposter to its owner's hand at end of turn.
Mm-hmm.
This is crazy because it's still named Sakashima.
Right.
Yep.
So you can have two of the same legendary out with this. It can clone a legendary you already have, and you can have two of your commander out.
Very specifically, you're going to be doing this with a card like Mizzix, which is why it's so powerful, is because you get double the refund.
Double use of your experience counters. Yeah. Or, I mean, it's crazy with basically any commander that matters to its deck, because that's the effect you built your whole deck around, and now you double it.
Mm-hmm. I believe it's the only card in Magic that you can do that other than Hall of Mirrors. Whatever the artifact is, that you can have any number of legendary permanents with the same name.
Which is useless to us in useless, our game, because absolutely. We can't have more than one in our deck.
Mm-hmm. And this is basically not even a doubling season, but like a parallel lives, you know, in blue.
Yeah.
Which is
and
great.
It also just happens to have this awesome ability, which is like, send it back to my hand so that I can now copy something else that's better now.
Like, absolutely.
Like, it didn't even need that text for us, but it has it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
This card's really good.
I like that card a lot, especially if you know that, like, now you're putting two 2/2s out every single turn, and it's spread across multiple bodies, and, like, you're never afraid of a board wipe. You can easily counter a board wipe. In fact, like, a board wipe is your number one counter target, right? Once you start building out your board, which is why I think you need to run more mass removal / resets in this deck.
True.
Because if you're going to be, for instance, if someone else has the ability to stop your creatures or block them, then you're in a bad spot. One of the most probably hated cards outside of Armageddon would be Sunder.
I don't hate
it. Josh doesn't hate anything.
I love it.
That's the return
equal opportunity.
Lands.
Yeah, so Sunder.
It used to be in here if it's not.
Three blue blue, return all lands to their owner's hands.
So good.
It's an instant. It's five mana.
Especially once I have a ton of Drakes out and it's just like, boom, now I'm,
right? And you only need to play, actually at that point, if you're holding a Pact of Negation or a Force of Will, holding a Force of Will,
don't
worry about anything. Even if you don't play lands for the rest of the game, having 10/2/2 Drakes and you Sunder, it's almost an instant win condition because it's so hard for someone to recover and get enough mana to play a board wipe. You just go after the white player or whoever has the colors that are most dangerous to you, right?
Yep.
I'm interested, too, in a card like Scourge of Fleets or like Aetherize, Aether Spouts, cards that bounce specifically attackers. Scourge of Fleets is a creature. It's a 7-mana creature, and you return each creature your opponents control with toughness X or less to the owner's hand, where X is the number of islands you control. So 7-mana, if you're just playing this for 7-mana, you're pretty much bouncing every single creature on the board for 7. And it's sort of hard to come by these effects in blue. And every time it's a creature-based effect, I'm a little wary of it.
Well, it's awkward because you have Drakes and stuff. And so most of this stuff is going to bounce your own things, which you really don't want to do. So you're looking for effects that are not symmetrical, that only affect your opponents.
Well, like Wash Out or something like that. Where it's like, I can return all, you know, I'm like, what's the biggest threat right now? White is. I return all white permanents or
white
creatures.
Right, it doesn't hit your stuff.
Right.
And you can copy that spell too in blue, right? You can double it with specific things. So you can say Wash Out for blue, copying it for, Wash Out for white, copying it for black. And sort of really
wipe
the board out.
Don't do blue.
Don't do blue, yeah.
Luckily, you're in blue, which is the least likely color that you're ever going to want to wash out, because blue just doesn't usually overwhelm you with like a whole bunch of creatures.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So a lot of these cards that we're talking about, I have in Mizzix. And that's one of the things that, like, when you make too many decks like myself, they have certain purposes. Like, Mizzix is where I want to just, like, you know, do all this crazy stuff.
Right.
The Mizzix and Talaran are very similar.
They're very similar in terms of how they want to affect the board.
The thing is that Mizzix has red, so you can use red as your winning explosive, earthquake, comet storm, something like that, whereas blue doesn't have those type of effects, so you got to get more creative with, like, okay, I'm up till that point, you're basically the same game plan, which is like counter all the important stuff, keep the board under control. But the thing is, Mizzix says, and then once I get here, I blow everybody up. But Talaran says, once I get here, I'm not sure what I do exactly.
Exactly. I'm trying to attack people with drakes, I guess. Yeah. That's really what it is.
There's another called Inundate that does the same thing. It's to return all non-blue creatures to their owner's hand, and it's a sorcery, and it costs a lot. But yeah, I like the idea of just putting in more resets, because that's like, what's the one thing that's really going to affect you is if players are really just coming at you hard, knowing that you're going to counter them. It's like, well, I built up this board today. I can just start swinging at Craig every turn, and he can't destroy my creature, so just bounce them or whatever.
One thing that I did used to have in there that I might put back in was Meekstone,
mm-hmm.
which as long as I don't pump my drakes, as long as they remain 2/2s, it says it's an artifact.
Creatures
for, I believe,
with power greater than 3 or greater don't untap. Untap.
Yeah. Exactly.
Untaps, yeah.
For 1 mana, and it's... Yeah,
that card is so awesome.
It can really stop a lot of stuff, a lot of hate from coming your way. You know, there's what is it, Propaganda and mm-hmm. that were my two kind of like walls.
Yeah, that's why I would actually recommend putting in a card like Clever Impersonator, because you can double a card like Propaganda.
Absolutely.
Just make it pay four.
Just make it pay four. Yeah, you can double so many like of your, if you need another mana doubler, you know, you can do another extra planar lens. Like, holy crap, your deck is just making 1,000 mana now at this point. Speaking of 1,000 mana, your counter spells, it's time to upgrade them. Like you said, Summary Dismissal. This card is really interesting, actually, because we saw it. Normally, you don't see a card like this ever see play in Standard, but it was all over the place because of a card like Emrakul.
It's the counter to Emrakul.
It's the counter to Emrakul, but not just that in our format. This is the counter to Eldrazi in on-cast triggers for Eldrazi. Triggers, yep. So you can get rid of the new Ulamog and a bunch of other cards. It's 2 blue-blue for an instant. Exile all other spells and counter all abilities. So... This
you can counter like Narset triggers and things like that.
Oh, this, I mean, this was an immediate put in. The only reason why I haven't put this in is because I don't have it yet.
Perfect. Well, in that case, Craig,
you're coming to my place tonight. Just remind me. I got like, a bunch.
I appreciate that. I got one.
I'm also going to go to Card Kingdom and purchase.
Man, you're the best.
Thanks, Craig. Yeah, you're awesome. Don't forget to use the affiliate link.
Yeah, CardKingdom.com/CommandZone.
Mystic Confluence is another counter spell that we were talking about last week. I think this card is really flexible. Obviously, I think. Because you have so many counter spells.
You have Cryptic Command in there, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because you have so many counter spells, I think the more flexible you can make each counter spell, the better. Because it's not like, you know, in a deck like this,
And this is another, I didn't get this set of commanders. Right. So that's, I know, I fell off for a little
Wizards
bit.
Wizards prints these sets for you. I'm aware. Specifically for you.
I'm aware. I bought a bunch of singles from this. Like I got the, oh no, this wasn't the Eldrazi one. Whatever. I got a bunch of singles from this, but I did not get this.
I wish I had
this
more
is
of
the
these.
Most expensive one too. This one's
because it's the best one.
Yeah, it's by far the best one.
I agree, but
because like I think
hopefully Card Kingdom has a great price on it because that's where I'm going to look.
Let's read it really quick.
Mystic Confluence, 3 blue-blue. It's a modal spell. It's an instant. So choose 3. You may choose the same mode more than once. First mode: counter target spell unless this controller pays 3. That's mana leak. You can do it 3 times. So make him pay 9. Her second mode is return target creature to its owner's hand. Or draw a card. So
you can draw 3 cards. You can draw a card, bounce a creature, and mana leak something. You can mana leak something twice because they have a bunch mm-hmm. of mana up and draw a card. Any mix and match of the three.
This card is a blowout every single time. It's almost impossible not to make this get more than one card's worth
even
of value
if it's
every time you
5
play.
Instant draw 3 cards.
No, I mean that's the mode I'd say I use the
most
on it.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But then I don't want a card that only does that because that card does nothing when something's killing me.
This does everything you want it to do in blue. Everything you want it to do in blue. Yeah. Absolutely. And it does 3 of them. That's great.
Yeah, and the thing I think a lot of players can make a mistake with this deck is like, oh, I'm going to put Negate in there because tons of people will be casting non-creature spells. Oh, I'm going to put this. It's like, well, you actually want to have a counter spell that isn't limiting, and the more that you can get value off it, if it draws you a card, if you can use it to counter different things.
Unless it's Swan Song.
Unless it's Swan Song, yeah,
Swan
just because it's such
great.
A great value.
Yep.
Plus, you can put Swan Song on this thing.
Yeah, and this is actually...
So, Isochron, I thought about putting this in there and quite a few times. Ever since I saw Isochron, I was like, here's what I really thought. I was like, I'm going to do it on Time Walk, right?
Right.
And then I go and talk to my buddy and he's like, Time Walk's a sorcery, dude. And
it's also, is it banned?
It's totally banned. And this was like, I was thinking like, I'm gonna break.
But Craig knows a lot about computers. Yeah, like, so
no, here was my thought. Time-wise? I'm gonna break Eternal.
Like, I see.
So, don't worry, somebody thought of that.
Nobody's thought of this.
Isochron Scepter, by the way, it's a 2-mana artifact with imprint. So when it enters the battlefield, you can exile an instant card with CMC 2 or less from your hand, and you can pay 2 and tap the scepter to cast the exiled card. So I did this in EMA twice. I put a memory lapse under this thing, or it's just straight counter spell. And for 2 mana, you can counter a spell from your opponent every single turn. I think this is just nice because it means you get to just constantly have a full-on real counter spell under it at all times.
If you can get real original counter spell, any other version of counter spell, this doesn't work with.
Or like Swan Song and stuff like that.
Yeah, there's
like,
a couple that you
it works
can,
with
they,
Swan Song, but Swan Song's more limited.
It's slightly limited. You can do like
it also gives them a bird to counter the bird that you're trying to get. So it's like there are certain like believe me, I've thought about Isochron. It's,
I think it would be an interesting
go down to the 2 converted mana cost.
Oh right, right. So the nice thing about Tapped Out as well is you can like click on 2 converted mana costs and figure out which of the cards.
Yeah, it needs more. You'd need to sort of retune the deck to have more things to take advantage of it. I think, like, you know, you want some brainstorms and some stuff.
Brainstorm
like,
would be great. Yeah,
that
absolutely.
Kind of
the
stuff.
The cantrip kind of stuff. Like, mm-hmm. I've seen a couple of my friends have built different versions of this deck, and one of the best ones that I've seen is a cantrip heavy deck.
Yeah.
And basically what he does is he ramps in cantrips.
So then he's casting 1-mana 2/2 flyers, basically, that draw cards.
That draw cards, yeah. And then he's putting down mana rocks and then casting more cards, and it gets out of hand fast.
I would just mana say drain could that your it. Current, yeah, you have Mana Drain, Cyclonic Rift, and Counterspell are 3 targets for this spell. If you add in at
yes,
least
mana
2
drain
more,
would be great.
I feel like, yeah, Mana Drain is one of those spells that just casting that is unbelievable. Yeah. And casting it more than once in the game is just GG, I think.
So, another card that I got because of Jimmy. We were out at a place and I was trading in a bunch of like
I've created
chaff.
A monster.
Like a bunch of stuff that I just wasn't using, and they had an Italian one for way too cheap.
Yeah, so I think. Oh yeah, you guys ready?
You ready?
Yeah.
With
I got
with
you,
feeling
I got you.
One.
Yeah.
Two, three. Hold on, I get to do it again. That felt so good.
There you go. There
get
you
a little
go.
Whip. You gotta whip it.
Whip it. Yeah. So Isochron Scepter is definitely one of those cards where you have to build your deck around it. But I think the upside is here. It depends, of course, in this case.
I think you want 8.
Eight
instants
absolutely.
That cost 1 or 2.
Yeah.
I usually think 10 or more, like, and ideally 14 or more, because that
well,
way
thing,
14,
do,
I think, is where it's like when you draw 7.
But you don't have to have it in your first 7. You need enough card draw that you're likely to get one with Isochron.
Mm-hmm.
And I think with 8 and you're in blue, you're going to most of the time be able to.
And with
even
the
with
two,
6 and then 2 ways to tutor those cards out,
the
right?
Two ways
because
to
getting
tutor.
Mana exactly. Drain with a Merchant Scroll seems like a very normal thing you would do in any
do
game.
Do you have Mystical Tutor in there? You could put that on Isochron. That's pretty good.
Yeah. You can also choose something.
What you're drawing.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, something like Trick Bind too, I think would be great to put under there because it has Split Second, and
absolutely.
This is a counter spell that counters a target activator to trigger the ability. Now, normally, you just don't play a card like this because you see this and you're like, well, it's so limited. But in the deck, when you're going to be potentially drawing a billion different cards, having this, I think, in your wheelhouse is...
Nobody sees Trick Bind coming.
No
they're like, man, it just gets you. You're just like, okay, this is guaranteed to happen, so I can count on that. And then they stop it, and you're like, what?
Yeah, right? Let's say you cast a spell, like a Tim or something that has a tap ability, and you don't counter it. They're like, sweet, okay, cool. I can start using this thing. I can start Fate Stitching all over the place. You can Trick Bind it. You can Isochron Trick Bind it, and just constantly keep that cycle going and lock people out of certain parts of a combo piece. Let's talk about card draw, though. Now, I think one of the mistakes that a lot of people can make, and I did this with Mizzix for sure, was I put in a bunch of the, like, sweet, once I cast this 6-mana spell, I can draw 7, 8, 9 cards, and you kind of forget that you have turns 1 through 5 to be doing stuff. Turn 4 or 3 is usually saved for casting your commander, but you kind of have this bad situation where you want to be able to draw more cards over the course of time. And Craig, Rhystic Study... Where
great
is
card.
It?
Is it not in there?
It's not in
we
there.
We talk about
yet.
This card every. This has become the new.
Prophet of Kruphix?
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. At least on Tapped Out, I didn't
look
not
at him.
See
he's
it
like,
there.
It's in there, I swear. I'm going to find it in this deck.
I might
I'm
not have put it on there, but
I'm
I thought I looked through here.
Well, it's one of those cards that I sometimes
so
think
good.
About, and I'm like, wait,
absolutely.
Why is
if
this
it's
in
not
the deck?
In here, it's only because I don't have another copy of it. Like, that would be the only
reason. That's a fair reason. I only have four, so.
And yeah. I may have not put it in here because I'm thinking, like, okay.
It's not an instant or sorcery.
It's not an instant or sorcery, so I'll just go with Brain Geyser instead.
Right, right. I think putting cards in that have flashback in them, you know, at first when I was doing Mizzix, I was like, I don't really care about flashback cards that much. When is it going to really be useful? And turns out, you don't need to really cast a spell more than twice for it to really make the difference. Casting a spell twice, like think twice, where you draw a card and you can flash it back for two in the blue, it's worth it. Especially if it's going to get you a 2/2 on top of it.
The fact that it's an instant is nice. I would look at that and I would say 2 mana to just draw a card. It doesn't have another effect.
True, like, I mean, that's what cantrips. You have cards like but Deep Analysis or Mystic Speculation, mm-hmm. where you can constantly be buying it back. Because I feel like you need to have some... Cause I've seen a lot of Tauron games.
Mystic Speculation's a great.
Where you just say pass turn, and then everyone says play a land, pass. Mm-hmm. Play a land, play something, and instantly pass. And then mm-hmm. it's your turn again. You haven't cast a single counter spell. You need to be able to do something with the end of that turn.
Absolutely.
So buyback cards, I feel like, are really good here.
You have Treasure Cruise, which I like, but I think Dig Through Time might be even better.
Yeah.
Because it's an instant. And so the ability to... Because, and I'm just comparing this to my Mizzix deck and seeing you play a Tauron. I'm so scared to be tapped at any time that isn't the end step before my turn.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
And so what I always want is I want to draw cards. I do. I just need to know when I do that nothing bad is going to happen between that and me having mana available. And the only time to do that is the end step before my turn. Mm-hmm. So Dig Through Time. Basically, the same as Treasure Cruise. It's arguable which one's better as far as the effect. Now, Treasure Cruise can be 1 blue mana. Dig Through Time can never be less than 2 blue mana. Because they both have Delve, and Treasure Cruise draws you 3 cards. Dig Through Time, you look at the top 7 and pick 2. Mm-hmm. So you pick the best 2 out of 7, which is basically equal to 3.
Yep.
And so 2 mana and 1 mana are close enough that I think I would go with Dig Through Time and get a Drake, do it on the end step before my turn, pull the best 2 cards out of my top 7, and get on with my life. And that's in the place where, well, like what you said, Jimmy, happened where I had my counterspells ready, but nothing happened that I wanted to counterspell. And now I can still get, I still used my turn. I didn't just do nothing.
Yeah, the only reason I like Treasure Cruise as well is
it's still great.
You can delve it for, you know, so it only costs 1. Like, and, I'm always thinking ideal. In a deck like this, it has a lot of, you're just playing cards and using them often.
Delve is a great, great mechanic in this deck.
Because you can triple.
Exactly, because you're can tripling a lot. And depending on the build, especially if that's what your build is to cantrip. Delve is one of the best mechanics you could possibly
play. I'd be interested to see what you think of a card like Bidon of Thassa as well. Because it is card draw, but it's on a 4-mana spell.
I love that and Coastal Piracy because you can attack with impunity.
Right, you're always drawing cards with.
Oh, that's right. That's what it is. Yeah, yeah.
So Bind of Thassa, it's 2 blue-blue. Whenever a creature you control deals combat damage to a player, you may draw a card. And this is the same with Coastal Piracy, except Bind of Thassa also has this ridiculous ability on there that I think is really underrated in Commander, which is 1 in the blue, tap the Bidon. Creatures your opponents control attack this turn if able. Especially if you're playing like a Stasis effect. And you know that they have 1 or 2 giant blockers that's stopping everyone from doing anything.
Yep.
Just having them tap it down, maybe you're going to take 20 damage or whatever, but it leaves them completely open. And if
or
they start skipping their
own if I have like Polymorph's Jest in my hand.
Right.
And then, you know, I have them attack me and then.
That's the thing. That's the problem. You can't tell them who to attack.
True.
So that, yeah, in Commander, that effect is not as good. It's still good, but they can find the open player to attack so they don't just run stuff into your creatures.
At the same time, though, it does force them to tap all their creatures out,
which puts them open, which then, if you can play a political game, you can be like, attack that person. They're completely open right now.
Attack him!
Attack him! Yeah, it just seems like there's a lot of good...
You got my blood going. I'm
a lot of
him.
Good abilities on one card.
It is.
On the Bidon. Especially if your Drakes are going to draw you a card, like they become Edrics.
Yeah, that part of it is just
I love this card. Like, you're bringing up cards that I love, Jim. I just have to cut some.
I would just start... Here's the thing. Is like, I think you would just start cutting counter spells at this point, right?
It definitely would be, which would make me sad.
Some of the bigger non... Like, just get rid of some of the higher casting cost stuff, I think.
Totally. So one of the ones that I do like that I think you guys are referring to with this high casting cost stuff is...
Arcanus?
No, Overwhelming Intellect, which is a bomb. So
No, I think this card's very good.
Yeah, I think this is in our Mizzix decks as well.
Okay.
Well, even Mizzix
though
cost
we're
two.
Casting it for 2, yeah. But Overwhelming Intellect, it's a 4 blue-blue counter spell. Counter target creature card draw cards equal to that spell's converted mana cost. By the time you're casting this, it's turn 6 at the latest, pretty much. you're going to be drawing so many cards off of this.
So many cards, and it's going to be likely a big creature that you don't want out there. And yeah, the value on that is too high.
Yeah.
You know, I just think a big issue is just ramp.
Ramp is tough.
It just feels like when we've played against this deck, you know, because I'm looking through and I'm not seeing a ton of high casting cost stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and
there's this, which is, you know, possible to cut.
I think the reason he said time stretch, it's 10 mana. I think the reason that we're both feeling like there might be a lot of high casting cost stuff is because it feels like once we get to turns 8, 9, 10, your deck doesn't have the output.
It's not finishing.
It doesn't have output.
It's not finishing.
It doesn't get to that point where, like, every deck normally gets to the point where around there it can do, like, three or four things.
Right.
But the Talon deck is still doing one thing then.
Right. Like, even if we get to Overwhelming Intellect, like we were just talking about, I draw, let's say, seven cards, right?
It's not that scary because you can do the same.
Well, the likelihood of four of them being counterspelled is very high.
Yeah.
So,
and you usually can't even cast all four of the counterspells.
Absolutely. Yeah. Especially after that. So.
Yeah. So I think, I mean, you have Mana Vault in there, which is, I already said, is one of my favorite ramp cards. But you all, I think in the deck, in any monocolor deck, it's really hard to argue against playing a card like Extraplanar Lens or Gauntlet of Power, I believe.
Yeah, Gauntlet of Power.
Which gives your creatures plus one.
Both of those are just great.
And also only affects basic land types for that. Because you could,
Right.
The really spiky thing to do is to play only snow-covered lands and then play Extraplanar Lens, because you exile a card under the Extraplanar Lens, and anytime you tap a land of that specific kind...
Of that name,
yeah. So you get double snow-covered lands,
but and people with basic lands don't get that,
don't get
right?
It, yeah.
Yeah. It's really interesting. I think the lands is actually an interesting part to look at in this deck, too. I think because we're cantripping, because we need to cycle stuff, you should be putting in Lonely Sandbar, Remote Isle... cards that you can, Talaria West, cards you can transmute or cycle.
Talaria West is great.
Toss into the graveyard and draw something else, because I think the last thing you want to do once you've established sort of like, I have X lands, I'm ready to go, is to just draw not gas at that point. So you need any, like if you draw one of these lands late in the game, it's awesome. You get to toss it.
The nice thing about Talaria West too, in those transmute, like Talaria West, I could search for Pact of Negation because it's zero converted mana cost.
Maze of Ith.
Any of the lands.
Yeah, I would argue that you could definitely do it with Muddle the Mixture as well, which
Muddle the
for
Mixture could search
CMC
for a two
card. Yeah, two CMC,
CMC
card.
Yeah.
And also cards like Homeward Path. And,
great card. Yeah.
Arcane Lighthouse, especially because I think
Arcane Lighthouse was probably taken out of this at some point.
One of the things I think the power of these decks is that you can help convince the rest of the table to do stuff by permitting people to do things, by putting yourself in the position where it's like, don't worry, I'm not going to counter your stuff. But hey, look, I'm going to Arcane Lighthouse this Sigarda because it has to get dealt with. I can bounce it, but that's not going to stop it forever. Can you do anything about it if I get rid of it? People go like, sure, I was looking to do that anyway, you know, or like it was beating down on me. You can extend a favor with your cards. And I think that's what you really have to do, because if you're just constantly counterspelling everyone, you're going to be the first person out of the game.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Which, you know, it's why this is mainly just brought out in like Two-Headed Giant.
No longer, though, Craig.
No longer.
No longer.
We're
going to ruin our own lives here, Jimmy. What are we doing?
My life?
Yeah, because you're going to use this deck against us now.
No, he's not going to use it against me. I'm the one helping him make it, Josh.
Yeah, exactly. I'm helping, too.
No,
Josh. See, look at what he's trying to do, Craig.
Am I not helping?
He's trying to put himself in the position.
Are you saying I'm not helping?
Always. Mono blue is always fun. Here's what it comes down to. Mono blue is fun no matter how you cut it. Like, there's just so much good in mono blue that the way you do it is the way that you do it. You know? Like, it's just different flavors, you know?
Lots of different flavors.
Are we done?
We're done.
With this one? Sweet.
One question that Josh and I both had before you even got here was, where's the Vedalken Orreries at? Where are Ley Lines of Anticipation?
Absolutely. So Ley Lines, I don't have any anymore. I don't know what happened to them. I had a few, but they're gone now. And then same thing with Vedalken Orreries. Vedalken Orreries I put in other decks like Rakdos because I need to be able to cast him when somebody else lost life. Mm-hmm. So having that out, I can cast him like on other people's turns, which is really helpful.
Oh, that's a great
one. We just need to play more of the first conspiracy. But yeah, Vedalken, that's the other card we've been talking about a lot lately.
Mm-hmm.
So good.
Rhystic and Vedalken Orreri are like, they've replaced Prophet of Kruphix as the most talked about cards on the cast.
Yep. Same with this one, Minimo. like yeah. unbelievable. That one's a little bit too expensive right
School
now.
Minamo Water's yep. Edge.
So good.
Well, I mean, you have Arcanist the Omnipotent in this deck, and Minamo's True. School at Water's Edge is just like, would you like to draw six cards right now, Craig?
Oh, totally. It's unreal. It's unreal.
Now, this deck can also get really mean. It's mono blue. Would you consider playing one of my favorite creatures of all time?
Oh, man, this is brutal.
Jin Kataxias, Core Augur.
Oh, yeah. I actually think I had that in here at one point because it's a game winner. It's like, okay, now I have a ton of cards and you guys have zero.
Jin Kataxias.
That's just a one card. I play it when I have a lot of mana, and if nothing happens immediately, I win.
Well, I forgot about the flash. Yeah. I forgot it
yeah,
was
so you can flash it. It's a 10 mana card. All right, guys. It's 10 mana. Yeah. 8 blue, flash.
The Praetors are all so good. I hope they bring them back in a different form.
You draw 7 cards at the end of your end step, at the beginning of your end step, and each opponent's maximum hand size was reduced by 7. So if someone has an unlimited hand size card, it doesn't really
matter.
You're
fine, right.
But for everyone else, this just means end of turn, discard your hand.
Yes.
Which is pretty brutal. And in terms of like controlling and locking out the game, I feel like this is one of the best ways to do it because you don't need to counter anything anymore.
Yeah.
And
yeah, everybody's just top decking, especially this with, what do you call it? The Arcane Laboratory?
Mm-hmm. Where you get to untap?
No. The only one spell per turn.
Oh, yeah. Arcane Laboratory.
So it's like then you have a lock. Especially with counterspells.
Especially if you're drawing 7 cards at the end of your turn.
Yep. Yeah, I love this idea. I would think about it.
I know Josh likes the Perplexing Chimera lock.
Oh, this card's so good, Perplexing Chimera. As soon as I saw it, I was like, yes! Then I thought, does it work in the deck? I think it does. With Capsize, it's great.
With Capsize. Deadeye Navigator, right?
So well, I have thought about putting that in here. The only thing is, just like you said, it's how do I get it back after somebody else has it? Because now they can start taking my spells,
right?
Mm-hmm. You know, as long as it's not a counter spell that I'm using, they've now taken control of my spell,
right?
Yeah, it's tough because like we're talking about 5 mana, 6 mana spells here, and at a certain point you just have to not play those because you're just right. really
and adding in something like Deadeye Navigator doesn't work as well with the rest of the deck. Mm-hmm. Like that would work yeah, with that not, combo.
But. The problem is I think Deadeye is not good by itself. When right. we talked about the Pickles lock and I was like, well this both cards work. But here I think Deadeye doesn't work with anything else really. And Perplexing is good, but I don't know. I don't know if you can really maximize it. It's really at home in the Flicker deck.
Because it's tied to your deck. Commander.
Rune is yeah. unbelievable with that.
Yeah. That basically, if you have a way to repeatedly Flicker Perplexing yeah. Chimera, you like nobody can do anything except board wipe. That's the only thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Blatant Thievery is a card that has been played in the Great other card. Josh in our playgroup plays it in his hell of a deck, Jaleva.
So good.
I find that this almost always wins games too because it's a 3-for-1 usually, sometimes a 4-for-1.
Mm-hmm. And well, you get the best stuff.
You get the best stuff, and it's a permanent. So you can even take away a land from them if you wanted to. And it's permanent control. It's not till end of turn.
You want to read it?
Yeah. 4 blue sorcery for each opponent. Gain control of target permanent that player controls.
So Oof. You get to pick one permanent from each player, the best one, and grab it, and it's yours. It wins, but sometimes somebody goes, okay, fine, board wipe.
Right.
Or well, that's I've had this happen before, artifacts. Too, Blame. Is somebody uses Homeward Path, you know, something that was mentioned earlier.
True.
7 mana is high for something like this, but this is the best one, better than like Spelljack, because mm-hmm. you do, well, I guess different from Spelljack. Spelljack's good in its own right.
Yeah, another card that arguably has a place in the deck as well. I mean, the nice thing about Blatant Thievery is you can take a Planeswalker.
Yep.
You can take artifacts. Based on the board, you can really take the ideal things, because you know if, hey, this person has a board wipe, then just take 4 Guild of Lotuses.
Yep. I would probably put Spelljack in before I would put this in, just because with Spelljack, it kind of counters it, and I could hold it up, so if it is a board wipe or something like that. Something like this, there's 2 things against it for me. One is the 7 mana cost, and 2 is the sorcery.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, it's a phenomenal card.
It's an interesting choice, nonetheless.
It's a great choice.
There's so many options with a blue deck. I think the big thing that this deck really needs is just a focused way of deciding how to win. I think Stacks speaks the most clearly to it, especially if you're going to continually make Drakes, if those Drakes are drawing you cards, and if you can stop people from playing more than one spell a turn. This deck has such a better time than someone being able to play... Because, I mean, we've seen EDH decks that play their entire deck in a single turn.
Yeah.
So the ability to stop them from, you know, doing something insane like that and just limit them to one spell a turn seems like the best way to keep pecking in Death by a Thousand Cuts.
Stacks is a great idea for a build on this or a revision on this. I do like that idea.
When you do, let me know so I can play my Animar deck. And don't tell Josh.
Oh, man. Why did we do this? Why? We just... now we can't even complain when it happens.
Oh, I'm not going to complain. I'm going to feel like I won, partly.
True.
Well, we won, right? We both helped.
That's always the thing. When you do see like one of your recommendations in one of your friend's decks, you're like, I helped do that.
Yeah.
You know, you're like, even if they win, you're like, I kind of won that.
It's hard to... Yeah.
That was kind of me. Yeah, I'm kind of the Michael Phelps.
Good for me. I was the Michael Phelps.
I'm the Michael Phelps with that game.
That's
what I love about this game is because it's so everybody can be on the same page about this. It's all very logical. It's not like political or anything like that. And you can see when somebody else does something off one of your recommendations. It's rewarding.
Well, Craig, I'm glad that you made this deck. I think it's.
I appreciate that you guys are helping me revise it because a lot of these things I haven't even thought of, and I'm like, oh, that really does make a lot of sense.
It's a hard deck to build, I think, and I think people are usually scared to make it as well.
How so?
Well, you just don't. No one's your friend when you pull out Tauren. Everyone's like, oh, no, this
here's
is
the
now
other
this.
Thing. You can do like Our such an inexpensive yeah. build on this, and it can be so effective. I mean, right. If you just fill it with cantrips and counterspells. You spend like 10 cents a piece at cardkingdom.com. You like fill up your cart with a bunch of like instants and sorceries, cheap ones. You can really do some crazy stuff.
Yeah, I think this is actually one of the best budget builds you can make
Absolutely.
In terms of power level and just how much it will cost you to make the whole deck.
Yeah.
It also features the best card in the
Which makes
gathering.
It a great second or third deck for somebody who's already kind of like built their deck.
Mm-hmm.
This is a great second, deck to really kind of add a little bit of variation to, what you're playing.
I mean, I like having a deck, like you said, that like, and I used this the other night, which is like if somebody just, every once in a while, like on a night, you just get attacked by the same player first three times in a row or something. And it's just like, what did I do? Why are you coming after me? And I'm just like, nope. And I'll to be able to just be like, dude, you are attacking me when there are options for you. You're choosing me every time for some reason. That's not cool. We have Blood Feud. I'm pulling out my counterspell deck. And next game, you're not going to have I'm not going to win. You're not going to win. And I'm happy with that. And if you're happy with it, keep attacking me all the time. Because yeah. I'm happy to play this deck. And you know what? That gives you a way to bring them to the negotiating table, and they'll ease off the gas pedal most of the time. And right. then yeah. they can go back to like rolling the dice to figure out who they're attacking and not just defaulting to you.
Right.
So I like having a deck that I can go to for that. Mine's Mizzix, yours is Talran. They both work in that way.
Table is also very often happy to let you do your thing.
Well, you announce it to the table, and then the other players are like, great, they're going to go at it, so we don't have to worry about them. Mm-hmm. And they sort of let you do your thing, and they like think it's funny. And it kind of is. And I would caution you, like, you can't do it over and over and over and over. And
right.
Then you're becoming the person that needs to have somebody pull a counterspell deck out on. But doing it once and just to make that statement and just sending that message can be very, very strong.
Well, knowing that you're willing to and you don't mind is the other one, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
The other thing, as I've mentioned a few times about why I built this deck, other people should think about this, too. If you do play a lot of two-headed giant or multiplayer... Or teams, it is a great, great
yeah, it's
support
super strong
deck.
There. Yeah,
I mean, like almost unbeatable. If somebody else has a good deck that's almost unbeatable by itself, having this kind of support with a bunch of counter spells really takes it to the next level.
Yep, that is that's how we played Battle for Zendikar sealed, two-headed giant.
All two-headed giant in sealed that's the best way to play it if you can, which is one deck with all the permission stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And one deck that actually can win. And you don't even need a single win con on the other one. Yeah. That or mill has to be the best in two-headed giant seal. Yeah.
And the fact that this creates blockers too in two-headed giant. Flying blockers.
Yeah. So you're just doing everything. You're like, don't worry, I'll stop what they're doing. You just concentrate on winning.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It's great. To the listeners.
Yeah.
How do you guys feel about counterspell.deck? Do you like playing against it? Is there any creative fun way that someone has used it that maybe changed your mind where you're like, I don't like counterspell.deck, and then you're like, okay, that deck's mine.
All right, that was fine. Yeah, I was like, oh man, that was actually kind
of
sweet.
Our playgroup's nice where I don't think there's a lot of animosity towards these type of decks. Like I've
Well, not yet. They haven't won as much.
Yeah, I mean, like Once I said, like winning, I said, Craig pulled this deck out, and I know because of me on a few occasions, and I'm like, yeah, fair.
Yeah.
Yep. That's that. I would do that too, man.
Acceptable.
Acceptable.
It is one of those things where when you see it come out, you're like, I know why that's happening.
Yes, okay. I deserve that. I deserve this.
And a reminder that Card Kingdom is holding that deckless brewing contest. It's called the Inventor's Fair Contest. You need to go to cardkingdom.com for the details. We are judging the Rushmi Eternity's Crafter EDH deck. You need to submit by Sunday, October 9th. To have a chance to win a booster box of Kaladesh.
Yep, and there are two other challenges if you want to build a standard deck or a casual deck. We're judging as well as Loading Ready Run and Magic the Amateuring. So again, all the details are in the description box below. And of course, don't forget to use our affiliate link if you're just buying some cards, cardkingdom.com/commandzone. And one last little thing to talk about Card Kingdom before we get back to the show. Really exciting. I got a package in the mail the other day, and this was all that was in it, Josh.
It is two awesome tokens from Jeff Stumpo. We got a monk token and a manifest token.
Yeah, he printed it out and then put it onto a card, so it, on the back it looks like a magic card. But
pretty sweet.
Really
Jeff,
sweet.
Thank you very much. You know, anytime anybody wants to send us something cool, they can go ahead and do it.
Yeah, and the cool thing is that he sent stuff for the Inventor Sweepstakes for another contest to Card Kingdom, and it's like, these are for Jimmy and Josh next time you send them something. They didn't send us anything else. They literally just sent us this in a package immediately. So it's like, thanks, guys. That was really cool of you.
I feel like Card Kingdom just has like this manic need to just send things where they need to go as fast as possible every time, no matter what.
No matter what. Got to go fast. Live fast, die young.
All right, let's move on to the end sub where we talk about something cool outside the world of magic. Craig, have you seen any movies recently? Done anything cool?
Read a book. TV series? Anything cool?
Went for a jog.
Saw Stranger Things, which is amazing. Everybody should see that. Saw Ghostbusters. Sure. I liked it. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a lot of fun. Yeah, and recently got a tent. That's really cool.
You got a tent?
Yeah.
Where are you going camping?
So I went up to Big Sur before the fire.
Oh,
it was
sweet.
Unreal.
Yeah,
got this tent that like hangs in the trees. It was sick. Had a great time for 2 days and looking to go back soon.
Man, I took a bunch of drone footage up in Big Sur. I haven't posted it yet, but I will. Well, I'm going to Iceland and Copenhagen and everything, so I'll try to put that all together. But Big Sur is one of the most beautiful places on the planet.
Absolutely. It was unreal, yeah. I can only imagine having a drone there by those cliffs.
Oh, man,
dude.
It's crazy.
That's sweet.
Good stuff, yeah.
That's
is
cool.
That where your drone almost hit the cliff when you were driving?
No, that was up in the San Gabriel Mountains. Also, there was a fire there, too.
Wait, while you were driving? Do you have one of those GPS things that it like tracks you?
I can set it to follow. I set it to follow my car because I was driving around this road at the, like the top of the mountain.
It almost hit a tree or something?
Well, yeah, I didn't notice the road was at like an incline. So the drone will keep distance, but it won't keep altitude. So it didn't keep going up as I went up. And then so like as I turned a corner, there was a cliff there, which it should have gone above. But because it didn't change altitude, it like went right for the cliff. And I'm driving, so I can't do much. I just reach over and tell it to just climb in the air. And it misses the cliff by less than 6 inches.
Yeah. It's great. The footage is,
you can
like,
see on the footage, like, it's literally
that's
like.
Great. Yeah. I want to see that. That sounds awesome.
Anyway, so yeah, maybe we'll post a link to that in the show notes.
Definitely.
Make sure to check out our sister podcast, our good friend Alex Kessler and Ben Bateman. They talk about modern and all things competitive magic. You can find them
smart
on Twitter
people.
At the MMcast. Alex and Craig are actually the ones that got us into Commander, so they are tangentially the reason that we are.
Alex is phenomenally smart at figuring out modern. This kid has been playing modern for the longest time, knows every deck, knows the ins and outs, knows what's good, what's bad. It's a great, great podcast.
Wow. We got to bring Craig on just to
hype up
other
things
stuff.
We're plugging.
Yeah,
you're just the hype man. All right, you can find them on rocketjump.com right next to us under the podcast tab.
You can also find us on YouTube at youtube.com/TheCommandZonePodcast. Our editor for that show and the audio show is Terry Robertson.
Yeah, Terry.
Yeah, he makes an awesome video version. You can see all the cards that we're talking about as well as our beautiful faces because, Craig's beautiful face. Josh and I, we're his hype man when it comes to that.
Yeah, Craig's face is beautiful.
So beautiful. Dude, Craig, you look so good right now. Go to youtube.com/TheCommandZonePodcast. And special thanks to Jeffrey Palmer. You can find him at LivingCardsMTG on Twitter. He makes all of the animations in that the video version that sort of intro the show and stuff. And that's, he does a great job with that. So make sure you check it out.
All right, Craig, thanks for coming on.
Thank you. Can I mention one more thing?
Sure.
Sure.
I was thinking about putting Cokes from the Blind Eternities in this deck. I'd love to hear your guys' thoughts.
It is a sorcery, and it is a win condition.
Yeah.
Go find the biggest Eldrazi you got.
But so, it doesn't stay, but it doesn't clog your deck up with a creature.
Exactly. I get a Drake, and I get to search for somewhat of an answer. You know, my thought is that I can search it for new Ulamog, exile two permanents, destroy a permanent, and have an indestructible creature. An
old Ulamog.
Exactly. You know, just
new different. Emrakul?
Probably, you know.
Take your turn.
I would love to see what you guys have to say in the comments.
All right, everybody. Thanks for listening.
And we'll see you next time.
Peace.
For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com or ask us on Twitter @JFWong and @JoshLeeKwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.